Morning, everybody. This is News Radio 94.9 890 KDXU. It's Wednesday and time for Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
It is a fabulous Wednesday again.
More than that, it's the beginning of a new year.
It is the beginning of a new year, and that's, you know, it's so exciting to realize that 2021 is over. You know, we thought 2020 was going to be bad. I think 2021 was much worse in many ways because it was no longer so unusual. It was just a commonplace, and it just caused so much havoc in our lives.
Well, there was just, it felt like there was more contention in the world and division, and that's always a sad reality, right?
So let's make 2022 the best year we've ever had. You know,
absolutely,
make it so much better than last year. But the truth is, the only way we're going to be able to do that is if we rely upon ourselves to make changes, not wait for other people. I think we've come to the realization that if we're waiting for somebody else to fix a problem, it's never going to get fixed.
We can't expect the government to solve our problems and take control. We must do it for ourselves. And since this is Elder Care Radio, we're talking about taking control of your own health and wellness. Be actively engaged in your own health plan.
We've realized that there are a lot of people out there who are spectators in their health care. They sit back and wait for somebody else to make the play, and they can cheer for them, but they aren't engaged in it. And we've seen that to be a real problem. Havoc ensues, and in fact, people are losing their lives because they're not being engaged. And we told a story last week, and a little bit of it, and we're going to kind of continue that story. But people are losing their lives, and it's because they don't know that they could do anything to help save themselves. So we want to change that. They didn't know, you know, what the problems were that were making them ill because their doctor didn't explain it in harsh enough words that they actually took that in.
We've said it before. Often our physicians will speak to us as directly as they think that we're capable of hearing. We have often looked at people's medical records and perhaps mentioned congestive heart failure or another condition. And the patient themselves will say, no, I don't have that. And maybe a daughter or a wife might say, yes, honey, we talked with the doctor about that. But it's sometimes surprising what we hear and what we don't hear. But one of the things I can guarantee is that your doctors won't hear you if you don't speak up.
That's right. And so what we've come to realize is that, doctors don't really want to be bearers of bad news. So when they do give that information, they usually do it very subtly. And if you're not ready to pick that up, you're not going to get it. And you have to be much more bold in your conversations. Be willing to have a conversation with your doctor. Be willing to give the information that they may or may not have. Because doctors don't necessarily know everything about you. I know we wish they did. I mean, they're the physician and they've got these, you know, they've done all these tests, but they're not going to remember that stuff. So it's incumbent upon us to be better communicators with our doctor.
Do not be a spectator, because we're seeing all too often that spectators are the losing people in this, you know, medical healthcare industry.
Yeah, in the hospital, people are coming in and the doctors are doing what they're doing. And if that's not enough, then they may pass away.
Well, and we get calls time and time again where people go to the urgent care or the emergency room and they're just not sick enough. Of course, you know, we are in a time of a pandemic and hospitals are overloaded. So many people are turned away to care for themselves at home. This is a sad reality, but we have the resources. We know ourselves better than anybody else. It's not that difficult to give our doctors a call and say, these are my symptoms. What can I do about this? Whether you can get into the emergency room or urgent care, if they send you away, don't give up. Don't just go home and sit and think, well, I went to the emergency room. They must believe I'm okay enough. I'm just going to sit here and, you know, wait.
People have been tragically damaged by, you know, drug interactions that shouldn't have been there. And so it's important, and we mentioned this last week, that it's important that you make that list of drugs that you're actually on so that when you go to the hospital or when you talk to your doctor and they are going to prescribe a drug, you can let them know what you're already on and how those things have affected you, if you understand
it.
So those are the problems that have existed, and we are trying to get everybody to be more engaged in their own health care so that they can help their doctor be a better better physician for you, a better advocate. Because if the doctor has more information, now, not that they don't have a list of the drugs that you might have been prescribed. It's in a file somewhere. But when you think of the doctor coming and spending that 6 minutes with you between, you know, all the other patients and at your regular visit, and maybe 15 minutes, how much of that time did you want them to just go back and look through your file to find some data that they may not even know what they're looking for? Because up until now, they don't know why you're in to see them. So when you go in to see them and you're having that conversation, and you can then hand them the information that they need, the list of drugs that you're already on, so that they can make an assessment. Because maybe you're just feeling lethargic and you haven't been able to live the life that you've wanted to for a long time. And your doctor's thinking, okay, well, maybe we'll give you a drug. But when you hand them the list of drugs and they find out, well, you're on actually 3 painkillers and you're in no pain, so maybe we should eliminate the painkillers. And that can have a...
Or at least back them off.
Yeah, and that can have a drastic impact on your mental status, your ability to think and cognitive ability. So it's important that we be engaged in this, in our own medical care.
Let's all remember, your doctor can have somewhere between 1,800 up to 2,000 patients. So while he might remember that you have a child in college or that you have 6 kids or some very specific personal details, he probably is not likely to remember the medications that you're on specifically or how long you've been on them. It is incumbent upon you to give that information. And if it's a hospital doctor, they're probably seeing 100 new patients pass through their door. You must be actively engaged in your own health care. This has become so evident to us. We just can't hammer this home enough. And we hope that you're truly listening and considering for you, for your loved ones, for your neighbors, how important this strategy is. We've seen absolute positive results as evidence of the importance of being your own best medical advocate.
And we're not saying the doctors aren't doing everything they can. I mean, truly, the systems are in place to help them accomplish all that they can do with the resources that they have. But they are a small player in a huge game, if I use that term. And so if you can be the person that helps them do their job better, then they will be able to accomplish much greater things. They will score more points, if we're going to use a sports analogy. They'll be able to score a lot more points with you assisting them than trying to do it all alone.
Well, and if you think about it, doctors practice medicine. What does that mean? It means they go to school, they get an education, and they get a lot of, you know, medical one-size-fits-all ideas or concepts on how to treat different conditions. They will often take your symptoms and go back and look at some, you know, old research and determine or prescribe a protocol or a plan of care based on what has worked in the past. Many of us might consider that a one-size-fits-all approach. Well, most of us realize very clearly that one-size-fits-all, while it may statistically benefit many, it will not benefit all, and it's not the right prescription for everybody. And consider, it may not be the right prescription for you. So you must ask questions. You must be involved in your plan of care.
And that's exactly the circumstances that created this story that we told last week. There was a lady who had been in the hospital for a couple of weeks, suffering from COVID and the complications of that. And she had been declining over time. She had declined to the point that the doctors had said, there is nothing more that we can do as a hospital, that you need to prepare yourselves and realize that she's going to need to pass away.
Right. She started out, as a severe COVID patient. Her family was not allowed to visit with her. She was placed in ICU. As her prognosis progressed, they'd allowed one person to come in to visit with her. One family member per day. It was that strict of a protocol, and it was, you know, under very extreme circumstances. They had the family members completely head to toe garbed in protective gear. It was the night before Christmas Eve that they called the family together, told them that they needed to speak with them, and said, from this point on, you can have all the family gather together, still in protective gear, but we don't expect your mother, your wife, your sister to live more than 24 hours. We're hoping for the best, but her prognosis is very, very grim.
And so she just wanted to be able to go home and spend the last period of time that she had at home. And that's a reasonable and wonderful thing to want to do. And so the family called us and said, hey, we realize that this may not take very long, but she really wants to come home. And we...
And may I say that the son heard us on the radio?
Yeah. The son heard us on the radio and, right. and said, well, let's make that call. So
yeah.
when they called, we talked at length of the condition she was in, and it was... she was on a an oxygen regimen that was unaccomplishable outside of a hospital environment.
Right, very high pressure, high concentration.
Right, so she had an oxygen concentrator that was concentrating a huge amount of oxygen in a cannula, you know, those little nasal things that they put in. But then she had a mask on over that that captured all of that and kept it right there. So she was just breathing a super high concentration of oxygen.
And it actually, this BiPAP actually was breathing for her. It was mm-hmm. forcing the oxygen in and also evacuating it from her lungs, which, by the way, was very, very uncomfortable, but she absolutely refused to be intubated.
Right. And the way the hospital tests to see how effective that is by checking the pulse ox, the oxygen that's in the blood with a little thing that you put on your fingertip. And ideally, we want to be close to 100%. Right. Well, she was in the 70s, low 70s, which is not not a successful amount of oxygen for all the things that were going on. And so we talked to him about, you know, trying to transport her home, and that may
realizing the concentration levels she was on. As soon as we looked at her medical records, we got back with the family and said, I have very sad news for you. It is unlikely that she would make the trip from the hospital to home. So she would never get her opportunity to pass at home. You are better off staying in the hospital. But then we went into but be your own best medical advocate. And that was interesting because then the questions of us started flowing that had not been, you know, asked or discussed with the hospital. And we were quite surprised. One just off of the top of my head that pops in is they said that they had tried to reduce the oxygen, but that she immediately went into respiratory distress. However,
started breathing fast.
Right.
And doing those things that,
panic,
you know.
Like,
yeah. So as she's breathing more and trying to, what the hospital thought, get more oxygen, they said, okay, we're going to stop that.
Right. It wasn't working. They looked at that and thought, oh, this is not working. This is a dangerous scenario. She needs the oxygen at full capacity again. But after the doctor left the room and the family was sitting together, the son turned to them and said, you know, I know they said it was respiratory distress and that, you know, that was a sign that her condition was, you know, not getting better, not getting improving, and she wasn't able to go without the high concentration of oxygen. But it looks just like when she's having a panic attack. And this son lives with her and has seen those many, many times over the years.
In fact, this lady had had panic attacks her entire life to the point where they were overwhelming and she had been taking drugs earlier in her life to try and manage that. But then she had developed some techniques and some strategies and some skills that she was able to generally manage her panic attacks, and she didn't have them as badly.
So let's just pause for just a moment and consider this. So you're in the hospital. You have cognitive awareness. You know you're on these high levels of oxygen. You know that the doctors have come in and said, we have nothing left. The last thing we can do here is see if we can wean you off this high level of concentration. Because if we don't, it will adversely affect your lungs permanently and you would be on it the rest of your life, which would have, you know, result in other kidney, liver failure, other organ failure. So we have to wean you off this. When they try it, they come in and they say, this is your one shot. So imagine laying there and you're already a high anxiety person. You know you struggle with panic. And they go towards that machine and they say, if this gets uncomfortable, then we know that there's nothing else we can do and you're going to pass. Can you control that anxiety? I mean, I think I don't have anxiety attacks, and I think I'd start having one right then. But she managed it for a short period of time, and then it just became overwhelming. So when the family brought this information to us, the first thing I said is, did you explain that to the doctor? I'm not saying that it was definitely a panic attack. I'm saying, did you give the doctor the information that perhaps it was?
Because if the doctor was working off the information that they had, and that was that they adjusted the oxygen and she seemed to need more, then that's the conclusion that they came to.
Right. The signs they're watching for is respiratory distress, which is that panicked feeling of I'm not getting enough oxygen and the symptoms of that. Right. So when we discussed, had they had that conversation? No. So being their best medical advocate for themselves, we suggested to them, consider asking the respiratory therapist to come back in. Explain that she often has anxiety and ask if there's a treatment that they can give for anxiety in advance and watch her again and allow her to push a little bit stronger farther if her oxygen concentration saturation rates remain in a safe level.
But understand that the hospital had already made the decision that there was nothing more that they could do. And it is really hard to convince a professional that they are wrong.
Yes,
especially
it was.
As a layperson. And so they had a huge mountain to climb, and they did.
And in fact, it did take them 10 days to actually get them to come back in and try again.
Now, that's 10 days while she's on this almost respirator, and that does damage our lungs. When we have this huge concentration of oxygen and our bodies try and adapt to that, and they get used to having huge oxygen and having it pressurized, to be able to then say, okay, now we're going to take that away, our bodies may not respond well to that. And that was what was explained to them early, is that, well, you know, she's on this, you know, almost respirator. We've got the high pressure, high flow oxygen. And so it's unlikely that if she's on that long enough that she's going to be able to get off of it.
Right.
And then they are trying to convince the hospital over a 10-day period that, you know, we need to do this. Luckily, they didn't just wait
for
the hospital.
In fact, this family took matters into their own hands. They did have the information available to them in the room of where the oxygen sat rates were. They were watching this. The nurses had come in and said, this is what this means, and if it drops below this number, this is danger. And so they had kind of learned and asked enough questions that they knew what was happening. They decided to, first of all, increase her water intake. That is huge. Many people don't realize how simple it is just to increase your water intake. If your kidneys are functioning well and you're not on a liquid restricted diet, fluid is your friend. It is your friend in any illness. And it's something that we don't really recognize our need for. But without a lot of fluid flushing through things through our system, that mucus builds up thicker, much harder to get out when it's really thick and settled. But
it's harder on all of our systems when we're running out of water. And in truth, most of us are probably walking around slightly to moderately dehydrated to begin with. It doesn't take much more to get much worse. So today, if you get nothing else, drink a couple extra glasses of water and see if that doesn't make some improvement in your life. And if it does, then continue that on a daily basis.
As Andy grabs his water bottle. Perfect. That is perfect.
So that was one of the things we talked about was just get her hydrated.
Right.
Have her drink more water. And so she did. We encouraged her to do some exercise. Now, she'd been laying in bed for a long period of time.
And she was at risk of blood clots. They had her on blood clot medications. So they did talk to the doctors about what kind of things can we do? Can we move her arms and move her legs just to get some mobility going? And with the doctor's, understanding and explanation, they started her moving, and she was able to, she was on blood clotting, medication. And so she was able to get out of the bed, and she's tethered to this high concentration, mask, but she was able to just kind of just do some tiny marching steps next to her bed. And it's amazing how much that little bit of exercise, just standing up and sitting down, standing up and sitting down, and 10 steps, how much that was to her. But over those next 10 days of them doing all these things for themselves, the increased water, the slight exercising, and the attempts at taking off the high oxygen mask and watching, it was the secondary mask that they removed and watched her levels and never let her drop below the 90%. I think at one point she got to 88 and they quickly put it back on. But they were tracking all of this and they were keeping records. And then at day 10, it was after New Year's, they decided to contact the respiratory therapist.
And in that discussion, now keep in mind that they had had a number of people come into them and explain how important it was for them come to the realization that this lady was going to pass. And they needed to have that conversation. They needed to accept it because that's an important part of this whole process.
This is hugely important. If you don't accept and validate what the palliative care team or the hospice team is telling you, that the prognosis is not likely that he will recover, and you're saying, no, they're going to live. They may think that you are struggling to accept that you are not in a position to make appropriate decisions for your loved ones. So make sure you acknowledge and validate what's being said. In this case, the family said, I recognize that she's probably not going to survive, but we don't want to stop trying until she takes her last breath. And so they indicated to the family or to the hospital staff, you've given me the information that she's going to die. Now we don't want you to say it again, and don't talk negative in front of our mother again. From this point on, we're working on a strategy towards improving. If she passes in the meantime, we'll accept that. We'll be fine. We'll deal with it. But we're not going to pretend like she's going to die. We're going to pretend like she's going to live.
And so with all of this, with them taking control of their own medical care and doing things that were going to be beneficial instead of just waiting for the hospital to do something. Because the hospital, man, stable is about as good as they're hoping for. You know, people stabilize and they've won their battle. But stabilization at this wasn't enough. She needed to improve. And so she did. And so the story going forward in our hypothetical events here is that the doctor, and we got to see this on the medical records.
Hypothetically.
The doctors have all come around to the idea that she's going to survive this.
Woo-hoo,
that she is going home. They've actually set a date for her to go home.
Discharge date.
And they put her on a respiratory therapy with a respiratory therapist, a plan to get her recovered. And it's only because this family stepped up. They found out that they could do something. And they chose to do it. And they've worked really hard to accomplish this.
I want you to know that even if you are not on our services, and often patients are not on our services, but we still want to help you. We will still assist you in helping you determine a plan of care for your family. We can kind of give you ideas of questions to ask. And as the family continued to reach out to me on a daily basis, I would remind them that I am not there and I do not know your mother, but you need to start listening to information that the doctors and the staff is giving to you, and always ask questions. As you ask questions, more information will be made available to you, and you will discover more true, specific questions that will help your loved one going forward. So it's really important to ask questions and give information. If something comes up, for instance, the anxiety, disclose that immediately and ask, could this be her anxiety versus respiratory stress? You know, ask those questions and continue to let them know. You know, the mother in this case is able to speak. She can say, I want to fight. I'm willing to work hard to do this. So constantly be actively engaged in your plan.
And understand that the doctors are going to do what they can do, but much of your healthcare, much of your improvement is your own efforts. And so we would recommend that. So give us a call. If you have any questions at all about anything, we love to answer them. How can you not take a call on Christmas Eve from a family who's struggling and then spend all of Christmas and through New Year's checking back with them and giving them information? Our telephone number, 435-477-6999. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Have a great week.